Then our next paper is paper number 15, which is our look back at the committee's work in 2014 and seeing what you dealt with and how you dealt with it. I guess place to start, perhaps I'll just sort of pick out a few highlights from here rather than go through in a lot of detail. I guess for me the headline headlines are that there were 31 new issues that you dealt with last year, and compared with 32 new issues the previous year, and with similar levels of work in progress at the year end. So a fairly sort of steady level of submissions coming through to you. I think what clearly has changed, and it's kind of more pronounced this year than perhaps the change that we saw previously, is how those have been dealt with. In that there were 26 of these 31 new issues dealt with through agenda decisions. That was a fair increase on the previous year. So looking at 84% of issues being dealt with that way compared with 50% the previous year. Now, even though those are agenda decisions are rejections, so decisions not to take things onto the agenda, nevertheless, 17 of those 26 were items where you reached a technical conclusion that you felt was appropriate to include within the agenda decision, so thereby providing some degree of assistance to those who were seeking guidance. Annual improvements was at, in terms of your decisions or your recommendations for including things for annual improvements, was at a similar level to the previous year. There were three items dealt with that way. However, we note that two of those items were things that when the board then discussed it, they identified other related topics which they thought would be more efficient from a sort of a stakeholder response perspective to include in narrow scope amendments. So they were still taken forward by the board, but in the form of bundling with other amendments as part of a narrow scope amendment. The other thing I think to just highlight then is moving on towards page 11 of paper 15, and that's our graph showing the analysis of issues by standard that they relate to. Now, when we do this classification, we look to the main standard that is the subject of the issue. Obviously, there are a number of issues that come to us that relate to more than one standard. So for this purpose, we have to pick one. So we pick the one that we think is most affected. And in the paragraphs following this, we sort of note a few observations about where those issues, or what the origin of those issues perhaps was, or perhaps what some of the reasoning behind the frequency was. Something like IS 19 and IFRS 10, for example, those were both standards that were new or newly applicable in 2013, and so it's only natural that we see more issues or more questions being raised in those very early stages as people start to get to grips with the standard. I guess that's something that we might see a bit of change when it comes to things like IFRS 15 or the impairment on IFRS 9, given that we've got the resource transition groups who will, in the first instance, be dealing with questions that first get raised as people start to apply those standards. The other observation I think to make is that there were some aspects of issues here that were related to the global financial crisis, so a number of the IAS 39 issues were connected with that, as indeed the IAS 19 discount rate ones as well were either directly or indirectly related to that. So those are just some of the highlights that I wanted to pick out, but obviously wanted to ask you if you had any questions about the analysis or anything else.
I mean, one of the observations is we seem to be getting issues, either newly issued standards or very old standards. I mean, we seem to be getting questions on IAS 16, IAS 21, IAS 12. So it's actually quite, you know, the shift in the standards topics is actually pretty interesting. when you look at it, I mean, if you think about the issues we've dealt with over the last year, a lot of them have been with standards that have been around for a very, very long time. And, you know, people are, questions are now being asked about the accounting under those standards that's been in place for a long time. So it's just an interesting trend, I thought, from the analysis. Yes.
I think maybe one thing to pick up on there is that we've had a couple of instances where, in fact, probably three instances that come to mind, IAS 1, IAS 7 and IFRS 5, where, in fact, IFRS 2 probably falls into this category as well, where we've had a few issues come in, and then there's maybe been a few more follow-ons soon after, or perhaps you've asked us to look back at some of the older issues related to that standard to see whether there could be some things that could be looked at collectively. And so there's perhaps that would encourage sort of more issues to come in. In fact, with IFRS 11, that was specifically the case where we had a small number of issues, but because that was a new standard, we did some specific outreach to see, well, what other issues are there? Then we brought all of those together as part of our sort of series of discussions on IFRS 11. So perhaps reflecting the way in which we were working there, but obviously triggered initially by submissions coming in.
Michael, do you think that might be partly the source of the submissions? Because we just had one on related parties that came from a newer jurisdiction. I'm wondering whether it's the spread of adoption of newer countries coming on are causing issues, or people are thinking about things. Because it's first time adoption for a lot of people in those jurisdictions, whereas others have actually been using the standards for quite a long time. And so it could be either just newness to it and giving confidence to interpretation, or it's possibly the odd slight difference in fact patterns. And we had one with, you know, would telephone towers have come through in I-16?
Yes.
So there are some issues where somebody thinks it's like slightly different or unique to their jurisdiction. So I wonder whether that's the issue as opposed to underlying problems with the standards themselves.
Pardon?
Yeah, I have a similar question. I don't know whether you exactly know it, Michael, but probably what is your guess? How many of these submissions have an enforcement background? So the question is how submissions are driven. Are they driven more or less from users, from preparers, or from, say, standard setters or enforcers? So that would be quite interesting from a statistical perspective.
It would, and I think, you know, there are our default position with submissions is that we keep the identity of the submitter anonymous. And so, you know, obviously when there's a number of submissions, then it's possible to do some analysis without divulging the identity of the submitters. That is something that could be done. There are obviously some submitters who choose to be identified, and ESMA is clearly one of those. They publish their submission letters on their website. It's certainly an analysis that could be done. One thing that I think perhaps wouldn't necessarily come through, though, is some jurisdictions, the accounting standard setter encourages discussion in the country, and then the standard setter would make a submission to us. And so there we wouldn't necessarily be seeing, is it the, you know, where is the ultimate source of that submission?
Yeah, because my thought was that specifically to topics which relate to, say, older accounting standards, these were also coming from enforcers or so. Just
yeah, it's Michael's point is well taken. Thinking about some jurisdictions, we get an issue from the Antarctica Standard Center. We might know that the bank regulator in Antarctica is the one that really has this issue. We don't always know that. So we don't know whether, and I'm thinking of a particular situation, whether the issues were coming from auditors who felt they were being shopped. People were opinion shopping, and so the auditors were looking for us to help out. Whether it was regulators, we just have no way of drilling down to that next level in any of those jurisdictions.
Yeah, because I mean, what one could think about is that specifically issues related to new accounting standards are coming from say practice or from auditors. They have more or less a kind of implementation background. Other issues related to standards already in place over don't know how many years. They're specifically regulators when they compare companies among each other, when they see different approaches how companies or industry deal with specific accounting standards like IAS 2 or IAS 16. Therefore, these topics are coming on the agenda table.
Point taken. One other point that I would put to the committee, that I may have done so in the past, but one of our former committee members, who now is chair of the advisory council,
lady,
but who otherwise will go unnamed, because and her name isn't important, what the issue is, challenged us shortly before she retired to rethink the way Michael does this report, because she, and I'm trying to capture her words, she said, this is a typical report done by an accountant. It's all about inputs and outputs and nothing about whether anybody found it worthwhile. That would have been the way she would have put it. It doesn't go the additional step of talking about how we meet people's needs. It may be that that's part of the trustees' periodic review and we can't really get there. But if anybody has any suggestions to Michael about things he could attempt to accomplish in his report that he isn't now, just because nobody's asked for it, tell him. Tell him offline. Not a big deal. But that's always welcome. Anything else for the good of the order? None appearing, that is the end of the public section of this meeting. And so I believe we will ask the people to turn off the broadcast.